makes it obvious that the piano is sort of a very adaptable instrument. And so I think she shows that in the performance really well. It is meant to be a comprehensive performance in the sense that this is book two as opposed to kind of the book one of last year's performance. So she's really put like a whole year's work into this as well, kind of covering the entire repertoire. I think it's just I'm hoping that there is kind of this, you know, if there's a recording, it gets widely promoted, and if there isn't, you know, she makes a recording sometime because it's going to be really worthwhile. But I'm just super enlightened and stimulated by her performances, and it's just I think it's just really worthwhile going to just kind of broaden your horizons and widen your perspectives about what's possible with these musical instruments and what's possible with music. So. Again, humongous discussion. I truly, really enjoyed it. It was one of the most kind of vivacious discussions I've had. Mm-hmm. She's just also a really good conversationalist. And, you know, in the same way a drummer is, this is why I kind of keep going back to a percussive element because she's really, I think, at heart a percussionist. It was just a phenomenal discussion. I had a great time, and I hope she's back in Vancouver soon. I'm going to just read you some of the accolades she had. You know, unfortunately, I can't get the clip to work. But, you know, she's been described as a monster pianist, monster musician by Time Out New York. You know, a new musician for a new era by Los Angeles Times. Just a phenomenal musician and someone to watch.
Great. Wonderful. We have a quick message here, and then we'll be back with part three.
Hey, are you a First Nations, Métis, or Inuit student? Not convinced university, college, or vocational trade school is possible? Or wondering what you should do after high school? Inspire can help you and your friends. Register for Inspire's free Indigenous mentorship program, Rivers to Success. Joining Rivers to Success gets you access to great information, great prizes, and exciting content. Discover careers and post-secondary paths geared towards Indigenous students across Turtle Island, just like you. Register online today at rivers2success.ca. Again, that's rivers2success.ca. Prizes, information, and fun are waiting.
All right, we're back, and we've figured out our tech issue, so we can bring you that clip Stephen wanted to bring you. So maybe you can reintroduce it. All right.
Yeah. So Vicky Chow is an amazing pianist from Vancouver who really does modernist interpretation of Philip Glass, the great modernist composer. And last year she came to Vancouver and did book one of Philip Glass's Etudes. And this year she came back in May and she did book two. So I think she's done now. But I'm just struck by her performance, how pugnacious it is, how vivacious it is. And I just want to show you a little bit of her performance. I think it was previously recorded. Vicky Chow. I think one of the things you just sort of you're struck by, even listening to it now, is kind of how muscular it is, kind of how strong it is. Mm-hmm. And in this sense, I'm struck by this, I'm reminded not necessarily of another modernist performance, but of a famous recording of Tchaikovsky, concerto actually, by the famous Argentinian pianist, classical pianist, Margaret, and she's. It was just a really atypical performance because typically, you know, people reserve a lot of power for the super virtuosic kind of performances, kind of Franz Liszt, maybe Paganini on the violin. But Tchaikovsky was kind of seen as this lyrical, melodic composer that was not necessarily equated with explosive power. And I think one thing Argerich did, and I think that was kind of truly revolutionary, it was show that the emotional depth and power of Tchaikovsky could be expressed with kind of physical power, like without sounding harsh or kind of unpleasant, but with physical power and impact. And that's something you kind of, the feeling you get listening to Vicky as well, kind of you get the sense that it's really full-bodied. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like having a really good Cabernet Sauvignon. Like it's just, it's there, you feel its presence, and you don't feel like it leaves you wanting more. You just feel like you're really sort of impacted, you're exposed to the power of this music. And this is why I'm just really looking forward to following her career, because I think ultimately at the root of every musician, especially professional musician, but also amateur musician, is kind of this deeply physical connection to music, right? It's not just a it is a spiritual connection, it is an emotional connection, but when you're up on the stage and making this music, it is also a deeply physical connection. And with her, I really see this fully expressed in a way that it's actually, you don't see it with many other people. So this is why I find her performances so intriguing. I find her such a sort of a fascinating character, and a very compelling character as well. So yeah, I kind of super enjoyed her talking to her, and I super enjoy listening to her music, and I look forward to more.
Great, should we listen just to a little bit more as we head out?
Yeah, absolutely. That was Vicky Chow, and it was a performance of Philip Glass' Etudes. And she recently came to Vancouver and did a wonderful performance at Christchurch Cathedral. And I was able to speak with her as well. And I look forward to I encourage you all to look her up and find out what she's doing, because I think she's doing an amazing job.
Great. We will be back in 3 minutes, 2.5 minutes with Stephen's third presentation. So coming out right here, this is Daniel Romano's Outfit, and You Can Steal My Kiss.
Like an angel in a night fight, you got me sweating red.
Daniel Romano's outfit. You Can Steal My Kiss from the album Too Hot to Sleep. And we are getting into that hot summer season. What's your third, what's the next show you went to, Stephen?
So the third and last, but by no means least, is I had a conversation with Damara Jim Jacobs Peterson, who is the director of Indigenous Youth Programs at the Museum of Anthropology. And the Museum of Anthropology, as you know, kind of is reopening after a very long sort of refurbishment and reorganization. And they're just like, I've spoke to her about a really fascinating exhibit, like one of the two main exhibitions that they're doing until the end of the year. So the thing I spoke to her about is a project called In Pursuit of Venus, quote unquote, Infected. And it's by an artist, a Maori artist, called Lisa Rehana from New Zealand. And it's a really fascinating project. And the reason it's a really fascinating project is because this was a kind of a remix, if you will, of an piece of colonial work called Les Sauvages de la Mer Pacifique. Les Sauvages de la Mer Pacifique means the savages or the natives of the South Pacific. And it was a wallpaper, actually, kind of a really hugely sized wallpaper, like it's larger than life, designed by the French artist Jean-Gabriel Chervet, and produced by the French luxury wallpaper and textile company Joseph Dufour et C. at the turn of the 19th century. And it was obviously one of these works that was full of the Orientalist gaze. Kind of, it was that depicted the South Pacific, the islands of Tahiti and so forth, as kind of places of license and places of kind of the opposite of the West, kind of the obverse of the West, as opposed to a place in its own right. And instead of just denying or ignoring this work, I think what the artists did that's really, really fascinating is that they kind of remixed it. So they took the original wallpaper, it's this huge piece of work, and they did projections, mixed media, song, you know, there's a soundtrack, and, you know, there's a live-action character. It was, and they kind of just projected on top of the wallpaper. And that's a super fascinating project because I think it ties into the debate about what we do about colonial monuments, for example, right? You know, like in the United States, for example, the debate often revolves around something like Confederate statues. Do you tear them down or do you put in an extra plaque that kind of explains the context around these statues, or do you put another statue beside it?
Right. And we've had that issue here at SFU with a number of works of art that were posted in prominent positions in the campus, particularly in the AQ, that were either celebrating colonial history or doing a sort of a mix-up of traditional and Western traditions.
Yes.
In ways that, you know, a number of First Nations groups and Indigenous groups found problematic. You know, in the case of some of the artworks, it was sort of a celebration of a sort of Western progress in BC that positioned, you know, the First Nations represented within it as sort of, you know, compliant,
sort of dependent, and it was kind of
and sort of they're observing without being actors in
without
in
having
the
agency
portrayed. Agency, exactly. So anyway, we've seen a bunch of that happening here, and most of those works here have been withdrawn. So anyway, sorry I interrupted you.
That's good because it's a good hook. I think the question I think it's really interesting is how do you interact with these kind of colonial pieces of media? I think, for example, in this case, right, the original wallpaper, Les Sauvages de la Mer Pacifique, you know, the natives of the Pacific Ocean, it was ostensibly meant to depict the progress of Captain Sir James Cook and his interactions with native peoples in the South Pacific. But obviously, it also served the colonialist purpose as kind of legitimizing his exploits, right? And with Cook, James Cook, you know, like I once went to a elementary school for a year named after James Cook. I don't know if it's still named after James Cook. Might still be, actually. There's always this weird incident where, you know, if you read his diaries, it's like, hey, I went ashore and the natives seemed really friendly. 5 days later, they seemed to really not like us. I wonder why. And then, you know, a little while later, you know, it turns out that he spread disease to natives as well. It's kind of a very dodgy situation that he seemed to have found himself in a lot of times. And I think it's a critical re-examination of Captain Sir James Cook is being long due. But I think the really interesting thing about this piece of work of art is that it re-examines and interacts with and kind of superimposes upon the original piece of work without necessarily destroying it. And what I mean by that is this is kind of originally designed as kind of a consumer wallpaper. It has artistic value, but it's not like a historical painting. So, you know, if you tore it up or whatever, I don't think anyone would miss it tremendously. But I think what they did instead was they took modern technology, projectors, soundtracks, the ability to form stories with live characters, and just used the wallpaper as a background. In fact, use the wallpaper as a wallpaper the way it was always intended. Like, you know, the whole saying about being a fly on the wallpaper. And it's kind of fascinating to me that, you know, it actually subverts the colonial narrative as well, because the colonial narrative is always that the Europeans brought advanced technology and they're more advanced, more technologically superior to the natives. But here, they're using most modern technology to subvert the colonial narrative, which I found tremendously interesting. Anyway, so this is part of it.
So we just have 1 minute to wrap it up. But
yeah, so this is, again, it's the show called In Pursuit of Venus Infected, and it's at the Museum of Anthropology now at UBC, running until the end of the year. And I encourage y'all to go, because it's tremendously enjoyable.
And the museum is newly reopened after a complete sort of reimagining.
Yes, it's one of the two major exhibitions. The other exhibition is by a local artist about local topics, local indigenous topics. And I also want to mention that Damara Jacobs-Peterson is herself indigenous. I believe she's Squamish. So that's super interesting.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Stephen, for all that today. We will be back in 30 seconds with Gardening with Embark.
Hi, this is Jesse Brown, the host of Canada Land, Canada's only media criticism program. Every week I talk to some of the most interesting people in the country about some of the things that matter most. We talk about the news media, about comedy, film, music, and politics. And you can now listen on CJSF 90.1 FM every Monday at 5 p.m. Wait for it.
And now we're back for our segment with Gardening with Embark with Pablo Vimas.
Welcome, Pablo. We are Pablo Vimas of Embark Sustainability Society, and Pablo is Embark's gardening manager.
That's right. Hello.
Welcome to the program. We are almost at midsummer, and we talked a bit about some of the herbs and other not wonderful things we could get. We're already harvesting last week.
Correct. Yeah.
And this week we're putting our summer crops into the ground.
Yes. Yeah. So over the last few weeks, we've been talking about how the weather has been changing, and therefore our cold crops are doing exactly quite well, actually. We have lots of lettuces in the garden, lots of spinach as well, and chives and lavender and oregano started to flower. And now it's time that as we go harvesting, we start clearing space in the garden. And now before the summer solstice, it is the time to start planting crops that will stand the summer and crops that we can harvest at the end of summer, at the beginning of the fall.
So what are the main crops we're thinking about right now?
So right now we are talking about root crops such as carrots, beets, and radishes, and leafy crops like lettuce and spinach. there are some varieties of lettuce that stand very well the summer, but I very much work with baby lettuce. So yes, young lettuce, leaf lettuce to eat during the summer. So yes, this is what we now start thinking on the fall. Summer just started and we're thinking in fall, and in 2 weeks time we will start thinking, well, I had to start my nursery as well. So as we are harvesting cold crops, we are start planting crops for the end of summer, and as well we are thinking of starting our nursery for crops in the fall.
All right. Well, that's certainly keeping us busy. You know, it's this whole gardening thing is very much an art and a science, isn't it?
It is. It is. And we have to be playing with very much how the weather comes. Yesterday was a lovely day. And today we had rain all day long. And the weekend is going to be cold again and rainy. So great for us, for our cold crops, but we are not happy with our summer crops. Tomatoes and peppers are really struggling in the garden.
So what were you talking about starting our nursery crops for the fall? What are we growing there? What are we getting started now so we have something ready to put in the ground in the fall?
So we start now all the cabbage crops, cabbage, broccoli, cauliflower, because they take around 5 to 8 weeks to develop from seed to a seedling. So hopefully by the week 36, that is our deadline now, week 36, we have
That's about when?
That's around the first week of September.
Okay.
Yeah. By that time, we have all our seedlings ready to go into the fields, because by that time we will be harvesting all the beans, as well the tomatoes. Some plants might be dying, so it's time to remove them. And then we go with our cold crops again.
Great. So with some of our summer crops in this cooler weather we're experiencing, and you're mentioning how, you know, tomatoes are, for instance, struggling. Is there anything we can do to help that, or do we just have to adapt to the weather and wait for it to get a little warmer?
Yes, that's one of the things that we gardeners face. We have no control over the weather. And we try to produce, to grow food with whatever the weather sends us. So, yeah, at the moment it's just hoping that the weather is going to improve in July and August. And hopefully the plants can catch up during that heat. But meantime, June, we are already the middle of June and it's cold.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
One thing I wonder about is, you know, the last few years we've had bad wildfire seasons, which have often led to extended periods of pretty hazy weather over the lower mainland here. Correct. Have you seen that as an impact on the gardens?
Yeah, it has kind of an impact. One is the weather. So this hazy weather, there is no direct sunlight reaching the crops, so photosynthesis will be reduced. But the other is about the heat. This stuff, air that stays in there, is not moving. So that is as well, plants feel that it's too hot as well. So we need just to keep watering to keep them supplied with moisture. But yeah, there is some effect because there are plants like, they need direct sunlight, like a tomato. Tomatoes and corn, they really require lots of sunlight in order to produce over the summer.
Great. So what plants right now are you putting in the ground?
So at the moment we have, we are starting with radishes and carrots from seed, and seedlings we can, as well, we can start beans and corn. From seedlings, we start with lettuces and spinach, just to have a bit of gain extra time. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. But, yeah, so it's just among all the summer crops, as well with zucchinis and cucumbers, we started with seedlings.
Right. And when will we start seeing the produce from these crops we're putting in now?
By the end of August, mid-August. Yeah.
And meanwhile, some of our herbs are in the ground, and as if we're taking care of them, we can continue to get some of those as well.
Absolutely. We keep harvesting our herbs. For instance, today I continue harvesting oregano. We have harvest first time, grew tall again, harvest again. So I have harvest today some oregano. I strip the leaves from the stems and I place them in trays, baking trays to air dry. So that's what we will have in 15 days. We will have nice oregano ready for consumption as well as thyme. But oregano is quite growing quite a lot during this time of the year. Yeah.
All right. Well, you know, summer's almost upon us, and I guess we just want to hope for that summer weather to come soon, so we can see our gardens thrive as much as possible.
That's right. So yeah, we just hope for a good weather and a long extent of good weather. Yeah, that as well brings us all the thinking that it's hot, we need to water more often, and all the limitations that hot summers bring with water restrictions. So yeah, we also have to keep in mind water conservation. Yeah.
Great. Well, thank you so much. It's an exciting time in the garden. Pablo Vimes of Embark Sustainability Society.
Yes. Thank you for having me. I would like to use this channel to invite to our students at SFU. Embark is hosting a summer solstice chill and paint activity on next Friday, the 21st, between 4 and 6 o'clock in the afternoon. We will be meeting in the Student Union Learning Garden.
Excellent. That sounds very fun. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Quickly, how do people find out about Embark?
So please visit our website, embarksustainability.org, or our social channels at sustainability, at Embark Sustain, sorry. So you can find us at Embark Sustain.
Thanks so much. We'll talk to you again next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And thanks, everyone, for listening today. Thank you, Stephen, for being here.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
Stay tuned for Democracy Now! Coming up right now.